Hi, I'm Lucien Wyszyk. I'm giving some tips on how to use async correctly in your libraries. What's really important is that when you're designing an async library, you should expose a chunky API, like peanut butter, not a chatty API. In other words, you should make it so that users don't have to have an await to your library call 10 million times in an inner loop. As long as your library has a chunky API where people don't have to await on it too frequently, then you don't need to worry about any perf things at all. But if you have to, if there's some inherent thing to your problem domain where you have to have a chatty asynchronous API, then there are some important tips I want to teach you about something called the async fast path. I want to step back for a minute with just a mental model about the code cost of synchronous versus asynchronous methods. Here I've written a synchronous method, and we all know that synchronous methods are pretty cheap and they get optimized very well. Here I've written the IL for this simple hello world code. I know that IL length is not a good measure of runtime perf, but bear with me, I'll get onto that in a sec. We all know that this is pretty cheap. The same thing is not so true of asynchronous methods. Here I've written an asynchronous method, and the IL that the compiler generates is quite complicated, but this isn't it. Actually, the compiler has to generate another structure object, and inside that structure object, it generates a moveNext method, and the moveNext method looks like this. And if you can see just here, this was the bit that did the actual work that I'd written, the bit that called console.writeLine of hello world. Now, don't get me wrong, this looks complicated, but the compiler stuff that the compiler generated for async methods is the best possible thing that it could have done. It could not generate any better code. You cannot write better code by hand. So this is doing well, and the overhead is insignificant for most APIs. It's only if you've been forced into writing a really chatty asynchronous API where people are doing async APIs a million times a second that you need to start worrying about this. And actually, what I want to make sure you understand is that the length of the IL isn't important. It's the number of heap allocations that are the biggest determinant of perf. Actually, it's not the allocations. It's heap memory allocation is like drinking alcohol. It's the hangover that hurts. With memory allocations, it's the garbage collection afterwards that hurt. So we'll strive to minimize the amount of garbage collection that we're causing. So let's talk about what heap allocations are made in an asynchronous method. Those are the overhead that async brings that synchronous does not bring. There are three of them, actually. First, it allocates this state machine class to hold all of the method's local variables. Second, it allocates a delegate. In .NET, a delegate is a heap type, so that's another heap allocation. Finally, the signature of an async method always returns a task. Task is a reference type. That means it goes on the heap. So it has to have a third heap allocation for the returned task object. So there are three allocations overhead associated with async methods. Actually, if the method skips all of its awaits, then built-in compiler optimizations will bypass the first of those two heap allocations. This is really important. You might think to yourself, that's crazy, Lucien. Why is my method async if it's just going to skip its awaits? Well, here, if you look at the code, this is a perfect example. What I've written is a function called getNextIntegerAsync. And what it does is internally, it fetches a whole bunch of integers. Maybe it fetches 1 kilobyte of integers at a time. And most of the time, when you call getNextAsync, it asks, have I exhausted my current buffer? If I have not yet exhausted my current buffer, then I can just return the next available integer immediately. In other words, 1,023 times out of 1,024, this method will skip its await. It's only on that final time where it has exhausted its buffer that it needs to make an async call to await fetch next buffer async and start again. So 1023 times out of 1024, this method will skip its awaits and will skip the first two heap allocation overheads associated with async methods. That's really exciting. There's something even more exciting that ties into that beautifully. And what that is, if an awaited task has already completed, then it skips all of the await resume work. So let's think what that means concretely. I'm going to show you the code gen. The code gen for var x equals await get next int async. What the compiler spits out for this code is, it says var awaiter equals get next async dot get awaiter, some internal machinery, I don't know what. Then it says if the task had already completed, then I can skip all of the complicated await return machinery and I can merely get the result. This is quite subtle. In the past, when I'd been explaining await, I tell people, the way await works is that when an async method comes to the first await init, it returns control straight back to its caller. That was a white lie. It's not quite true. The real truth is that in an asynchronous method, when it comes to the first await of a task that has not yet completed, then it returns to its caller. But if it comes to an await of a task that has already completed, then it just plows on straight on through. You might ask yourself, well, that's strange. What's he talking about? What kind of async APIs would be already completed by the time they return? What was the point in them being async in that case? I'm going to show you with a really good example. This is the getNextInt async function I was showing you earlier. And what this method does is that 1023 times out of 1024, this method was completed already by the time it returned. So anyone who invoked this method, invoked a method, and they got back a task that was already completed. So it's a kind of virtuous cycle. Any callers of this method, even though they had to use await get next async, they will also benefit from exactly the same optimizations and avoid the extra heap allocations. Now there's one final heap allocation that I want to talk to you about, and that's for the returned task object. As I said, async methods, they return task or task of T, and task is a reference type, so it has to belong on the heap. But let's suppose you had a task of bool. Well, this is quite cunning. The .NET framework pre-allocates a singleton task of bool of true and a task of bool of false. So if you had an async method which was returning task of bool, then no matter what you return, it can just return that already pre-allocated task object, so it can bypass the heap allocation completely. And it does that. There are about six of these common values: 0, 1, true, false, null, an empty string. If you return any of those common things, then your async method will have zero allocation overhead at all. That's really a good place to be in. What happens if your method didn't do that? What happened if your method returned some other value? Well, you can figure out something here. You can cache the value yourself. And I'm going to show you how with an example. I'm going to do some garbage collection benchmarks to see just how many heap allocations some code had. I wrote this function track garbage collections. And first, I'll try it with two different implementations of memory stream. Let's have a look at the first one. Actually, let's look at the trackGCS method. What it's going to do is it's going to use the .NET framework stream.copyAsync method to copy about 1 megabyte of data. And my first memory stream implementation, this was memstream 1, because I'm testing the .NET framework stream.copy2Async method, I know that it's going to call this virtual method stream.readAsync. Now, this is a memory stream, so there's no point having a truly async method. All the memory is already in memory. I might as well do the work synchronously. But because I'm overwriting it, I have to return this signature. But I'm doing all the work immediately. I have no awaits in this method. So it's certainly going to take the fast path. It's going to bypass the first two async overhead allocations. But it's still going to incur the third async overhead allocation of allocating a new task object, a task of int, to say how many bytes were copied out of the number of bytes that were requested. My second implementation does something pretty cunning. It caches the last task that completed. So inside the read async method, it still has a signature that returns task of int. But what I'm going to do is first call this base method read to see how many bytes I read from the stream. Most of the time, it's going to be the same, right? The way the method works typically is it says, hey, please read the next 1,000 bytes, then read the next 1,000 bytes, then read the next 1,000 bytes. So my answer of how many bytes I just read will very often be 1,000. And what I'm going to say is that if I already pre-allocated a task and that pre-allocated task had the answer 1,000 or whatever I have to return right now, then I can just return that pre-allocated task. I can avoid an extra heap allocation of a task object. It's only if the task wasn't there already in my cache, or if it had the wrong number, then I'll allocate another task object using this task.fromResultFactory method, and I can return it this time. So most of the time, we believe this is going to work pretty well. Let's run it in practice. The first memstream, one, which allocated a task every single time, ended up having 14 garbage collection cycles because it was allocating so much memory. The second one, because it needed to allocate far fewer of these memory streams, only had 4 garbage collection cycles. So we've had a dramatic improvement in a method that had to be called really frequently just by caching the task. And in fact, a cache size of just 1 is good enough most of the time. That's really exciting. Let me show you just one other neat thing about this code. What I'm going to do is try the built-in memory stream. Let's see how well the built-in memory stream works in terms of its optimizations. Look at this. The built-in memory stream involved 0 garbage collection cycles. So obviously, the guys who wrote the .NET framework and who implemented the built-in memory stream really fought tooth and nail to extract every last bit of async performance they can to get as few allocations as possible. This is always possible. You can figure out how to do it yourself. It's a kind of trail of diminishing returns, actually, though. And just if you do this work to cache the last completed task, you will have most of what you need. What have I told you? The important thing to keep in mind is that all of these are micro-optimizations that are irrelevant for the vast majority of code. If you're writing good, well-designed asynchronous APIs, and you're able to expose chunky asynchronous APIs, the user doesn't need to call more than, say, 1,000 times a second, then the overhead of all of these async heap allocations will be irrelevant. But if you've designed an async API that has to be invoked more frequently than that, and you've done perf analysis using whatever perf tools, and you've determined that heap allocation and garbage collection was the biggest perf problem of your code, and you determined that the allocations that came with inherent to async methods were a bigger problem than the rest of the allocations in your code, then I've shown you some important optimizations that you can use to work around this. The fast path is where it was all about, and I hope you liked using it. Thank you very much.